Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This hour is brought to you by Volvo Orland Park. And the top of the hour is presented by Northwestern football coach Collins and Northwestern basketball. Return to the new Welsh Ryan Arena on November 2nd. Season tickets on sale at NUSports.com. He is Matt Miller at NFL Draft Scout. He of Bleacher Report and the Stick to Football podcast. Matt, hello.
How's it going, guys? Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, you too. Here, let's. I want to get a reset here on something that came up in the wake of the most recent Bears game. If you were to tell the Chicago Bears fan, newly excited about this team's prospects for good reason, how to watch Mitchell Trubisky without making every game a referendum on everything. Is he the right guy? Is he the wrong guy? Should they have taken Mahomes? What is your advice on how to watch these games? Knowing each game, it's a football game. It's not necessarily reason for larger judgments.
Man, yeah. I mean, I watched this game Monday night, and you guys know I'm pretty active on Twitter, and just seeing Bears fans overreact. And listen, I don't blame you guys because I hear it too. I mean, I hear it from the national media. I hear it from – I read it on Pro Football Talk. Like, I see the dumb grades that come out on Monday morning after a Sunday night game or Tuesday morning after a Monday night game. Like, ignore the noise and just enjoy watching him improve and get better. And I think from week one to week two, you saw improvement. And that, listen, the Seattle defense doesn't have Richard Sherman anymore. They don't have Michael Bennett. But like, that's still a very good defense with a good pass rush. They have underrated stars. I mean, Earl Thomas had a great game. We've seen what Shaq Griffin's going to be at corner. That's not a bad defense. And I thought, yeah, he had some struggles. He absolutely did. But I was really encouraged not only by Mitch, but by what Matt was able to do and what Mark Helfrich was able to do in terms of coming out the second half and adjusting the game. First half, yeah, it was a little rough. And I think once you got out of the script, it was a little rougher. But they made the right adjustments to come out in the second half and win a ball game against a very tough Seattle team. And we're still not seeing all the elements come together offensively. That's going to take time as they gel. But, I mean, he's only started 14 games in the NFL, guys. And this is a player that when he was coming out of North Carolina, the biggest concern with him was the fact that he was a one-year starter. So there's just not right now a ton of that film and development out there for him to be, oh, he should be Jared Goff. Well, Jared's in his third year, and he pretty much sat for his first year. He's not going to be Carson Wentz. Like, he is a year behind these guys. And anyone saying that you want Mahomes or Watson, I would hit the brakes. And I'm a Mahomes guy, but pump the brakes because it's been two games. And two games in last year, everybody was ready to say Deshaun Watson was the next great player in the NFL. And this year, he's not playing that well. He's not playing better than Mitch right now. I would say he's actually playing worse.
I guess in order to square that, though, or at least to present the other side of the coin, you look at a game, you look at that game from Mitch, and there's a couple of plays that work out really well for him. The touchdown pass to Miller is a great little throw. There's the back foot toss to Tariq Cohen that looks great. But if not for Michael Kendricks just missing a football that was thrown out to Howard late and a terrible decision to throw toward the goal line, a ball that should have been picked, like, it could have been a disaster. And if he avoids one or two, it could be, you know, is a three touchdown game. Is that fair? Is that a fair basis for him going forward from here on out that we're just going to have some of these back and forth games because of where he is on the curve?
Guys, I think that's football. I mean, if Kyle Fuller misplays two balls that could have been picked, it's a completely different game. Yeah. I mean, he would turn around and find the ball. We're talking about a different game as well. So I don't think it's fair to do that after the fact, to go back and nitpick and be like, well, if this, and this happened, the game would be different. Like, that's every game unless you're watching Alabama beat somebody by 60, right? Where it's like, yeah, well, this could have been different. I think in any close game, you're going to have those moments where the game pivoted on a couple plays. So, yeah, I'm not going to come on here and lie to your listeners and say that this kid's, you know, going to be great there are concerns. I think he's telegraphing at times. One of the picks was clearly telegraphed. I think it was Earl Thomas or Shaquem Griffin's pick where, yeah, I mean, he stared the guy down and made a bad throw. So we have to see him, I think, loosen up. He's a little rigid right now. I think he's thinking more than he's reacting, and that can be really bad for a young quarterback. But he's tough. He's showing accuracy on the underneath routes. And when the ball comes out quickly like it did in the second half, we're seeing him make plays. So I think there's still a little bit of a, you know, they're still figuring each other out as far as play callers and schemers and what Mitch is able to do. So I think anybody hitting the panic button or trying to play what-ifs about what if you had Pat or what if you had Watson, I think they're still in good shape, and the coaching staff is the right staff to get the most out of him.
If one Googles the Arizona Cardinals right now, the first result is a big dumpster fire, and the second is, is it time to start Josh Rosen? I think it's a fair question, but why would you do that against Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks and Aaron Lynch, who showed up and had a great game, and anyone on that defense?
Well, I think I hear that question a lot, and we kind of went off on this on the podcast because you get that a lot. Like, oh no, we don't want them to start against this team because their defense is good. Mm-hmm. You know, like kind of all defenses in the NFL are pretty good. You know, it's not like there's one. You know, where, oh, let's wait for the Lions. You know, we'll just beat the crap out of them. I think too often, like, you could say that about every defense. And, you know, the Cardinals play in the NFC West. There's a lot of good defenses out there. And if it's not this week against the Bears, it's next week against the Seahawks. And you got to worry about Frank Clark and all the pass rushers they have. And then it's, oh, well, it's the 49ers. And they have DeForest Buckner. And, like, you have to get them out there eventually. And I think that this is, like, my huge grand takeaway when people say that about quarterbacks. If you are so worried that Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks are going to break the psyche of Josh Rosen, you should have never drafted him in the first round anyway. Like, if that's going to break this dude, where that's a pretty good defense and he's going to struggle, it's going to ruin him. Hey, he shouldn't be out there. And if you're so worried that he's going to get hit in the mouth and not be able to stay healthy, you shouldn't have drafted him that early anyway. So I think that you can't be afraid to play your guys. You know, if it's a developmental thing like Baker Mayfield or like Pat was last year in Kansas City, where they're just not ready. We are asking them to learn a completely foreign language. We don't want to get them on the field yet. I get that. But with Josh Rosen, whose football IQ was the highest of any quarterback in last year's draft, you're watching Sam Bradford, you know, throw for like 3 yards of pop. They had 90 yards last week. That's just not going to get it done. So I think sooner or later, you got to see what the kid can do. And you know, I'm looking at their next six games. It's not like there's a cupcake defense that you're going to roll them out to. I mean, you have the Vikings and Broncos coming up too. So you kind of might as well just get him out there.
In addition to your responsibilities as a scout and columnist, I'm going to ask you to play psychologist here and figure out what my disorder might be. I will preface this by saying I've always generally been kind of a John Gruden fan. I liked him in the first go-around as a coach. I loved the energy level. I found him interesting as a broadcaster. I loved hearing him talk about quarterbacks. And nobody made people give him $100 million. Yet, I am rooting so hard for him to crash and burn. I am loving every bit of discomfort that the Khalil Mack trade is causing him. Why? Why am I enjoying this so much? And why is it seemingly important to me to have him fail miserably?
I don't know, but I'm in the same boat. I don't know how often you check my tweets, but I am so thoroughly enjoying the fact that he's out there like, yeah, pass rushers are hard to find. No, they're not. Your trade is one of the best ones in the NFL. Like, they are hard to find. But guess what, dummy? You had one. It frustrates me to no end. And I think the reason that I'm enjoying that they suck so badly and that he is just incompetent and they're getting blown out in the second half of games. I mean, they are just getting destroyed. In my notes, they've been outscored 43-7 in the second half of games, guys. That's coaching. Or the over-the-hill old guys that you signed who are getting worn out in the second half of games. But I am personally enjoying it because I am so sick and tired of everyone telling me this guy's one of the great coaches in the NFL or in NFL history. He's Jeff Fisher with a Super Bowl win on Tony Dungy's team. Like, can we get over the fact that this guy, because he's got a scowl and he wakes up at 4:30 in the morning and ESPN hired him, it doesn't make him great at all. And you know, he ruined, he ran out of Oakland as he saw the ship sinking. He ruined Tampa Bay. I mean, that was an awful team. And then he wisely jumped ship when it was time to go to ESPN and make his money. I've seen nothing in the preseason and the offseason, in the two games they've played, to suggest to me that this guy's some offensive genius. You have Derek Carr, Amari Cooper, pretty good offensive line, and Marshawn Lynch, and you're getting outscored in the second half of games. There's no way to me that this guy deserves the money, the attention, the credit. I mean, there's pretty much a Gruden cam anytime they play, where they just follow him around, and he's not doing anything. I don't understand it. So I think that's why I want to see it fail, just because the hype and the excitement, and it was just so over the top that it kind of deserves to fall.
Well, no one's going to top that.
So you're saying when he takes credit for having Colton Miller in the first round after panicking and taking him, he probably didn't deserve that either?
Right. Yeah, geez. Oh, we want Mike McGlinchey. So we tell everyone in the NFL we want Mike McGlinchey. And guess what? Someone takes him right ahead of us. Oops. Yeah, man, I'm going to enjoy every loss. And what's weird is my oldest brother's a Raiders fan. So this isn't like that I grew up in Missouri and I hate the Raiders. Like, a lot of my really good friends are Raiders fans. And maybe that factors into it too. I want them to be miserable, but it is it's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. I love my friends. They're all Packer fans, and I hope they hate every minute of their NFL season. How high were you on what the Bengals could be, specifically offensively, up until Joe Mixon messed up his knee?
Oh, man, they were looking so good. And what's funny is I was talking to Peter King over the summer, and he was like, yeah, Cincinnati looks really good. And I'm like, okay, old man, sure they do. You know, I'm just like giving him so much crap about it. And then they come out red hot, and I had to apologize to him because they did look really good. And it seems like they've like decided, hey, we have A.J. Green and Joe Mixon. Let's just give the ball to these really good players. They got faster and younger on defense. I think they're being more aggressive on the D-line. They could have been special. Yeah, I mean, now that Joe Mixon's going to be out, what, maybe 2 weeks? I guess 2 to 4 weeks, we'll kind of see what happens. But I actually like Thomas Rawls as kind of a stopgap guy. But it is going to be interesting to see. I mean, it's funny that everyone wrote them off, but Marvin Lewis and that front office has kind of quietly done a pretty good job of flipping over this roster and getting rid of some of the knuckleheads and improving the offensive line. You know, and then saying, hey, okay, we're going to go now. We trade for Cordy Glenn. We draft Billy Price. We're a little more athletic up front, and we're going to give Andy Dalton some time to use these weapons that he has, and it was working really well.
Over to the Saturday games, it's number 20 Oregon hosting number 7 Stanford. How much of a chance is this for us to figure out something about Justin Herbert facing a team that's going to look more pro style? He's Oregon. I mean, we talked about this earlier. He's an Oregon kid.
Yeah, I think this is a great game, and you know, we've talked before, guys, about, you know, sometimes the matchup matters, and sometimes the bright lights matter. So I think that's a big thing for Herbert, because one of the rubs on him is not only is he a scheme guy, but he's kind of come across as a little soft, where you want to see him get beat up and see how he recovers from that. And I think with Stanford running a very pro style defense, you know, they are so well coached defensively. They're gonna penetrate up front. They're gonna get after you. They're gonna be disciplined in coverage. I think that's the kind of thing where you look at this is a test for him, a really big test. And on the other side of the field, Stanford's quarterback, KJ Costello, is pretty fun to watch as well. So that'll be just a good game to watch if you like quarterbacks.
What has the success of Kyler Murray done to affect retroactive beliefs about Baker Mayfield?
Well, man, not to point back to Twitter, but you know, Baker and I kind of got into it this week because of that. So I wondered the same thing, Dan. I'm sitting there in a hotel room watching the game, and you have these thoughts of, man, I wonder how the NFL feels about that Kyler Murray's probably going to win a Heisman and that he looks unstoppable and he's not considered to be a draft prospect. So to recap that quickly, I sent a text to Area Scout, boom, hey, what does this mean? He replies back, I'd be going to the bathroom scared. I guess it's the best way to clean that up. And yeah, I mean, so it's okay. You do worry about, man, maybe this was scheme, and maybe it is that Lincoln Riley's a great play caller. And I think it at least makes you wonder, because we haven't seen Baker yet. Okay, well, how much of this was coaching, and can we duplicate this? And he, of course, got mad about it because he's as the thinnest skin of any quarterback in the NFL, and went at me on Twitter a little bit. But I think it's a valid question of, you have this guy who he's only going to play football for 1 year. I mean, he's reporting to spring training with the Oakland A's. He's making $5 million right now to be a baseball player. And it's basically, hey, we'll let you play football for a year, go have fun. And that's what he's doing. But hey, he's been I think you could say maybe even better than Baker Mayfield was, and he's utilizing guys like Marquise Brown, who looks like a first-rounder at receiver, and CeeDee Lamb, and their running back Rodney Anderson goes down, tears his knee up, and they just plug Trey Sermon in and don't take a step back against Iowa State. So, and we'll get to see them tested a little bit more as, you know, the Big 12 schedule kind of gets rolling, but it's not like you're going to see a lot of great defenses in the Big 12. So, I mean, you know, they play my Longhorns, and they're gonna steamroll them here in a couple weeks. But, you know, it's just it doesn't look like something where they're going to ever see that test unless it's in the college football playoffs, where you can say, okay, how much of this is Lincoln Riley? How much of it's Kyler Murray? And what's the difference between him and Baker Mayfield? I think that's a really fascinating story that you really aren't allowed to talk about.
Matt, great stuff today. We really appreciate it.
You bet, guys. Have a great week.
Matt Miller on the muscle.
He's got targets after 2 weeks in the NFL. He's got places to go.
I knew what I was asking and why I was asking it.
Reading his progressions and taking shots down the field.
Seeing the game through Matt Nagy's eyes. This segment brought to you by Indeed, used by over 3 million businesses for hiring, where business owners and HR professionals can post job openings with screener questions, then sort, review, and communicate with candidates from an online dashboard. Learn more at Indeed.com/hire. Something happened in Boston.
Yes, it did.
Something really weird. This might be the most Boston thing that's ever Bostoned, and there's audio.
This is a cross between The Town, The Departed, and a Marx Brothers. Like, this is just, it's great, it's nonsense, and it sounds beautiful.
So be here for it next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Nicely played.
Well done.
The segment brought to you by the Backyard Barbecue Store, your big green egg superstore that offers everything you need for barbecuing. Remind me later, there's a kangaroo court fine coming for Connor McKnight.
Yeah, apparently. Yes. Dude, one little question. That is a question.
I mean, no,
It's not a food group I traffic in frequently.
Remind me to get to why Connor is being fined by the kangaroo court. I had one bad experience
at this place, and I haven't gone back in a decade.
Is going to have to weigh in on this. Okay, so what do we need to know on background here?
Yeah, so this is a Boston Globe. Apparently, something had gone missing from Fenway Park, and it's something that wouldn't be duplicated. You know, if this one thing was found somewhere, you would know what you had, right? This would never be mistaken for anything else. And the Boston Globe apparently caught up with the two guys who had found this thing. It's a division championship banner hung, you know, the long one. It's probably 25 feet
yeah, it
long.
Says, it says 2018 American League East champions. It's got the Red Sox logo. And it's enormous. It literally fell off a delivery truck. And these guys apparently found it on a highway in Somerville, and they tell their story and explain what happens now.
Now, we have our coffee. We're driving on McGrath Highway in Somerville, and I noticed a couple cars swinging, like moving to the right. And
derp.
Now, we have our coffee. We're driving on McGrath Highway in Somerville. And I noticed a couple cars swinging, like moving to the right, and we seen something in the street. And he's like, "Louie, what is that? What is?" I'm like, "I don't know. What is it?" So I ran across the highway to grab it. We brought it in the car. We had no idea what it was.
Yeah, Boston.
It was wrapped up in a brown paper bag.
Number one, Boston.
First thing I said, "This belongs to the Red Sox. This is for Fenway Park."
Yeah.
Like, how do we have this? Like, nobody made this. This belongs to the park. I'm thinking that they hang it off the Green Monster.
Yep.
We want to give it back to them because it belongs to them, and it doesn't belong to us. Yep. But in reciprocation, we would like, you know, maybe to go to a nice playoff game. Or we're looking for something. We just don't want to hand it over to them.
Right.
We need to negotiate here. We want to. We're looking for,
we're working, too.
Yeah.
I mean, my man had to run across three lanes of traffic.
But we know that that's the original one.
We were told there was only one made.
Yeah, we were told there was only one being
made. So at that point, that tells us. But then they told us they had a duplicate. So if they do try to put a duplicate up, You best believe we're going to show up and say,
we have the right one.
That's not the right, that's not the original.
So we're hoping that they don't make one and they put the right one up.
We're hoping they do the right thing. Yep. You know, we did the right thing. We could have kept it. We could have put it on eBay. We could have, you know, we got connections where we could have reached out to other sources. We're big supporters of the Red Sox.
And we want to see them win, and we want this banner to go back on Lansdowne Street or wherever it belongs.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is Louis Iacuzzi and James Amaral.
We want this to go back to its rightful place.
We got some connections.
It's not ours. We know it's theirs.
Fenway
if they
Park.
Want it back, they better pay up.
They got cars
I
swerving.
Swear to God, they better pay up.
You got Fenway Park.
Burn this thing in the front lawn
you got
if
a
I don't get tickets.
You got a nice banner here. It'd be a shame if something happened to it. So apparently this is the update that was posted to Deadspin via the Boston Globe. The banner has been returned to the Red Sox in exchange for nothing. The owner of the company that made the banner has accused Louis Iacuzzi of stealing it.
Oh, did it not fall off the truck?
Which he flatly denies. He said the negotiation process went smoothly. From the Boston Globe, the theft allegation did not sit well with Iacuzzi, who said in a third interview that they lost the bleep. They're the ones that bleeped up. I found it. I'm trying to do the right thing. If I didn't pick it up, 100 people would have ran over it. I don't want $1 million. I don't need $1 million. All I wanted was to maybe bring my family, my friends to an effing baseball game, maybe meet a player.
My family and 100 of my closest friends to a player, maybe play shortstop for like an inning or two.
And not all my connections, game. We know some people.
I don't want to play the whole game. I just want like 2 innings. I'd like unlimited beer. I'd like a good number of Fenway Franks. I would also like to make a trade come deadline time next season. Just the small things that every Red Sox fan dreams about when they steal something from the ballpark, maybe, alleged, whomever, however it happened.
I don't know that in this situation it ever crossed their mind. And did they ever think, maybe if you know it's not yours and you want to do the right thing, instead of announcing your intention and desire to do the right thing, why not simply do the right thing?
No, because they're working too.
Why not simply give it back to them?
They're working too. Doesn't like every baseball, doesn't every franchise, when stuff like this happens, don't we always read the story about, hey, two guys found the banner and they gave it back to the Red Sox and the Red Sox gave them tickets to a game. Like we always, those stories are, that's what we do in the Midway. It's a bunch of those stories. Those and like aliens are probably coming. But those are the stories. That's what we end up doing.
I do have an update during the Midway.
Oh, you're going to do it? All right. I had written it down. I thought maybe you'd missed it, so I'll cross that off my list.
Oh, the update to what happened in New Mexico?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
It's a great outcome, isn't it?
I'm not buying that at all.
Oh, you're not?
Way. No.
That's
like,
or
these
Jupiter.
Guys, they fell off the truck. Are you kidding me? No. No, come on. I'm not buying that. Routine training exercise? Nonsense.
These guys, if you think that the SNL superfan sketch just sort of nailed the essence of Chicago sports fans in a way that satirizes them brilliantly. This isn't a sketch.
No.
It easily could be. If you wanted to write something about how to make fun of Boston sports fans, that you if you listen again, the friend is in the background doing like a Flavor Flav bit as this guy's talking.
Guy.
Yeah, it's the hype guy. He's like, Boston number one. New
Yankees
York
suck.
Yankees suck. Red Sox number one. I mean, you can hear it in the back. They're doing everything as if like, hey, you're going to be this guy. I'm going to be this guy. What's your name? I don't know. Louis Iacuzzi.
Yeah,
perfect.
Yeah, we'll do that.
It's a little too on the nose.
I think we can make it work.
I noticed a couple cars swinging, like moving to the right.
Couple cars going to come on. It's so good.
Because Louis was sitting in the street making him swerve so something fall off.
Waving his arms.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. The Wildcats have the best home schedule in the nation this fall, hosting Michigan, Notre Dame, and more at Ryan Field. Tickets to both games are available with season tickets only. Buy now at nusports.com. In a little bit, we're going to talk to Jim Suhan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune to get a local take on their version of the Jimmy Butler, Tom Thibodeau saga that thankfully has nothing to do anymore with this city that's moved on to other things. Here is why Connor McKnight is getting fined. And guys,
we're going to do this now.
We're going to do it now.
We're going to do this
now. We got a couple of minutes here. We're going to do it now.
Great.
I mentioned just offhandedly, as I'm wont to do. Most I mentioned I'm craving Popeye's chicken, so I think that's going to be the plan for post hockey practice tonight. That they've got a special going right now, at least the one near me. The one it's 20 pieces. No,
the one on Damon.
I want to say maybe it's I think it's 10 pieces, two huge sides and four biscuits for $20.
That sounds lovely,
right?
Sure.
So perfect for two people. So
two.
Well, one's a half. I mean, he's 13, right?
Yeah, so growing, though.
Well, yeah.
Finally,
eat as much as anybody
eating
else.
A lot. But so I think we'll do that. And then Connor says a couple things.
Wait. Let me present my
case. Hold on a second. I haven't even presented the prosecution yet.
My background with Popeyes is probably worth setting up before you bury me with what apparently will be the nail in the coffin.
Well, if it's controversial at all, then you're wrong.
Well, it's not controversial. It's just a question. You want to? You know, can I have the defense?
I haven't prosecuted yet.
Fine.
Okay. First of all, he offers, you know, I'm not sure about Popeye's chicken. It's I don't like the spice. He didn't know they had mild chicken.
That was not offered to me as a solution.
Okay, first of all,
one time I went there.
He wasn't aware that there was such a thing as mild.
When you order, they say spicy or mild.
Nope, they did not. Nope.
So you've been there one time ever.
That's right.
That's on you.
Wait.
That's
hold on. Z-Pack is ready to... No, wait.
That's correct.
Hold on.
And then once.
I then
one time.
I mentioned that there's four biscuits. Connor McKnight then said, are their biscuits good?
How would I know if I've only been there the one time?
You literally asked,
Are
Popeye's biscuits good?
How would I know?
They're lawfully good.
This might be the first time Dan's the more likable person on this show.
How would I know? I've been there once.
Which is the biggest issue?
It was in Fort Collins, Colorado, when I was working my first job out of college. I walked up there, and I was like, well, I kind of wanted some chicken.
Yeah.
So I went up to the Popeyes. I'd like some chicken. What do you have? And the guy literally goes, it's spicy. You're going to love it. And this is what you're having and take it. So I did.
Maybe they had left was spicy. It was late at night.
I don't know.
Or they thought you were a normal human. Who knows?
It was in Fort Collins. So either they just had spicy or meth left. Those were the two choices I had. So I went with the spicy chicken because I wasn't feeling meth and I didn't think I could put it on a biscuit. So I had the chicken. It was just the chicken. I didn't like the spicy all that much, and I haven't gone back. I feel like that's a pretty reasonable explanation as to why I asked whether the biscuits were really good.
Except for the fact that it's Popeyes!
Are their biscuits good? He asked.
There are other places.
I stopped in my tracks.
To get chicken. But, there are other places to get chicken.
It's the best place to get biscuits, though. They are the king of the biscuit.
Best place?
Yes.
What?
You take Popeye's biscuits,
no
KFC mashed potatoes.
No one parades around these halls and screams, you have to get
Brown's chicken. Right. Get the Brown's chicken, maybe the Brown's fried mushrooms, the KFC mashed potatoes, and Popeye's biscuits. You're living large.
If we had a team photo of people that were in your camp, Connor, you would not want to be part of that
I'm
camp.
Not saying this is a position
I hold.
No, he'd
be meeting with Tom Thibodeau right now.
Questions I'm
to the
asking.
Knicks.
I'm not standing up. No, I'm not being misrepresented.
You can
this is
only have this thought if you're wearing a Timberwolves jumpsuit.
This is pure nonsense. I am not saying that Popeye's biscuits are bad, and that's how this is being skewed.
How can you not know?
Well,
to be fair, it's a new company.
Had one.
Yeah. Okay.
That's why.
All right. Okay.
That's it. We're getting Popeyes.
All right. Fine. Let's get some Popeyes.
I gotta have delayed gratification.
But you don't get any. Fine.
All right. Next,
we'll have Popeyes, and you can watch.
Jim Suen's going to give us thoughts from Minneapolis on Butler and Thibodeau and all that. That's next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Of course, Steven Jackson is involved in this somehow. Of course.
Why wouldn't he be?
And it's Andrew Wiggins and Nick Wiggins, and it's all because of Jimmy Butler posts a video of how hard he's working because Jimmy Butler has to be about Jimmy Butler.
And because Carl Anthony Towns doesn't work hard enough for
obviously.
His liking, that's a problem.
And Jimmy Butler always had this great relationship with Tom Thibodeau, now apparently doesn't like how much Tom Thibodeau might like Carl Anthony Towns, even though he doesn't play defense. And all I know is... it's Minneapolis's problem. And here to talk about that from the Minneapolis Star Tribune is a guy you can find on Twitter at Suhan Trib. He is Jim Suhan, and we always enjoy his company. Fun stuff, Jim, huh?
It's been 30 years of hell with this franchise, and this might be the most hellish thing we've ever seen.
What's second? Is it the Joe Smith contract issues at
there are
circumvention?
85 different things tied for second.
What is a possible good resolution for this for the Timberwolves?
Oh, it's funny because Timberwolves fans and people who care about Timberwolves, the media, are absolutely apoplectic about this. And I kind of never expect anything good to happen with the franchise, so I'm not as panicked as everybody else. I guess here's the good path. The good path is they can trade Jimmy for something, a useful player in a draft pick, maybe. And without Jimmy, Karl-Anthony Towns says, okay, everybody just get out of my way. I'm going to be Anthony Davis. I'm going to take over the franchise. I'm going to be one of the best players in the league. I'm going to make this thing work. Andrew Wiggins wakes up from his nap, which has lasted for 5 years, and decides to prove some people wrong, which seems to be a motivation that works for athletes. And Thibodeau says, okay, I'm not just going to hand the ball to Jimmy and let him run the offense, let him take the big shots, let him take the last shots. I'm going to run an offense that gets better at three-point shooting and is a little more diverse and makes complete use of Karl-Anthony Towns, and they're not a bad team. That's the best path forward here.
Yeah, so none of that's going to happen, right?
No, none of that's going to happen. That's the
path. You know, we talked last year during the season, and it took a while for Minnesota fans to realize that Tom Thibodeau is best consumed from a distance, kind of. It's sort of like when you see somebody far away, the good from far, far from good. As you get closer and closer and live with it longer, he is a beautiful basketball mind. But some of the other stuff becomes a grind, becomes wearying. And I didn't know what would happen when he was given full control over a franchise. But it just seems that over time, people close to his orbit, as great as he is at coaching a game, people around that tend to get less happy. Is that fair to say that they're at a pretty unhappy point?
He got betrayed, which means he misread the most important person in the franchise. And so everybody else put their faith in Tibbs to make this work. Tibbs put all of his faith in Jimmy, and now there's nothing left. I mean, it's not going to work. The interesting twist on this is that Tom has spent the summer trying to make himself more personable. I've had long conversations with him. You know, he's reached out to a lot of people. He's decided, okay, I'm not just going to be the guy sitting in his apartment alone with one piece of furniture watching tape. I'm actually going to talk to people. I'm going to kind of open up myself up as much as I am capable of doing that. And so here we have Tibbs at his most personable, being his most devastated self, and they're having media day on Monday, and he's going to have to go up there and say, I don't know. Actually, because he's Tibbs, he's not going to say anything. He's probably going to pretend none of this happened, and that's not going to work. And you're right. Tom just does not wear well on most people, and now people don't have a reason to want him to wear well on them.
But what does this mean in the big picture for Timberwolves basketball? You can joke about it and just sort of, you know, woe begone franchise with the lake right nearby. That in today's NBA, optics, image, brand matter more than ever because players have to want to play there. And there has to be a reason why this guy and this guy say, we want to go win a championship there. So what's effective? What's the elevator pitch for the Timberwolves mattering now?
You know, I don't know if any of it's going to work now because the best players Tibbs has brought in have been former Bulls who knew him. He traded for Butler, put all his faith in him. He brought in Taj Gibson, who's been great. He's been a great pro. He now has brought in Luol Deng just to be a bench guy. He wasn't going to be a big factor, and that kind of be another voice on his behalf in the locker room. Now that doesn't matter as much. And he brought in Derrick Rose, who was very good at the end of last year. Whatever his issues, and he has many of them, he played well for them at the end of this last year. You know, opposing player, we've heard this from many people around Target Center and team employees, opposing players will come over to the Timberwolves players and tell them, how do you guys play for that guy? I ain't going to play for somebody who's going to scream at me for 48 minutes from the sideline. So, you know, Tibbs has his allies, but he's never going to get a free agent who has other choices to come here.
So is it a matter of Thibodeau not seeing what Jimmy Butler is or wanted or needed out of this relationship? Is it Is it a matter of his lack of ability to be personal, to relate like that? What caused him to miss what Butler wanted?
Yes, he misread it completely. And I just think Tibbs thinks in very simple terms. I think he thought, I'm going to get Jimmy. Jimmy's going to know I love him. We're going to win games. We're going to elevate a franchise that has been horrible for 14 years. And he's going to love that. And he's going to love the position I put him in. He's going to love the trust I show him. And he's going to want to be around. And Jimmy instead said, that was all right. I'm going to go play someplace else. I mean, I don't think Jimmy ever intended on being here a long time. Tibbs just misread it completely. And, you know, it's a fascinating league, you know, for all the analytics, all the numbers we can throw around. This league, pro sports to me are about personalities, and this league more than any other is about personalities and relationships, and Tibbs blew that part of it.
So what really happens now, even if they open camp and Thibodeau, well, whoever's here is here, and we'll play as well as we can with whoever wants to be here, at some point they've got to figure out value. And if they say, we're not trading him, we're not trading him. Now, when it becomes public that Butler said what he said, this is the fact that this is all happening out in the open strips away the leverage. And we know that just because a guy says, these are the teams I want to be traded to, the team is not beholden. He doesn't have a contractual ability to hold them to that. So from a business perspective, what do you think are the proper steps if they are going to move him to try to get something close to what he should get?
They're not going to get value. They have to move him for whatever the best offer is. It's not going to be a very good offer. They just need to get a useful player in return. They have no leverage. And if they keep him, Karl Anthony Towns might not sign his contract, which he has to sign by October 15 to prevent him from becoming a restricted free agent. You can't lose Butler and Karl Anthony Towns. So even though Tibbs is telling people he doesn't want to trade Butler, he has to. The owner has to make him if he doesn't want to. You have to trade him. You have to say, we screwed up. We're getting low value on this. Now we have to hope that Karl Anthony Towns signs, stays long-term, he can build around him.
What does it say about Jimmy Butler that most of NBA Twitter right now is dragging him, I guess with the exception of Steven Jackson, who's gone after Wiggins?
Hey, listen, Jimmy, behind the scenes, you know, the more I heard from people in the Jim Butler's organization, didn't always treat people really well, certainly didn't treat some of his teammates very well. And here's my issue. Listen, we know that every good NBA player is his own corporation. They're going to maximize their profits. They're going to do what they want to do. We all know that. With Jimmy, though, the fact that he spent all year talking about winning, and then as soon as he really had a big decision to make, he said, now ship me to a really lousy team where I can make as much money as possible, does undercut his you know, I'm a win-first guy. And listen, there's another angle of that. The other angle is he can go to, let's say he goes to Brooklyn, and he goes to a team that can then go get Kyrie Irving and another good player. Maybe he does end up winning games down the road. But if he cares about winning right now in his prime, he would stay with Minnesota, and he doesn't have any interest in doing so.
Yeah, I agree. He's 29.
Yep. And he has bad knees.
Right, he talks like he's 23. He's got a ton of heavy minutes at his age. He was an older rookie, as these things go now, and he's been worked very, very hard. Why not? I mean, I don't know who advised. I've always wondered who has advised Jimmy Butler and in his is sort of meteoric rise to his belief of superstardom. But I'm with you, Jim. I think really, if that entire team really dedicated themselves to winning, they could be really good.
They could be, you know, if everything went right. Last year, they were third in the West. The West was great. Third in the West when Jimmy was healthy before he hurt his knee. And they were on pace to win, I don't know, 52, 53 games. And that was with trying to figure out how to play together, and they didn't always do that well. If they really cared and played well together, this could be a 54-win team, a home playoff series. And, you know, the thing is, Jimmy doesn't care about that. I don't know how much Andrew Wiggins cares about that. And, you know, Karl Anthony Towns cares, but I'm not sure he knows how to get those things yet.
Jim, we always appreciate your time and insight. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
That's Jim Suhan, Minneapolis Star Tribune on Twitter at Suhan Trib. He's a really good follow. So we have the Midday Midway coming up. I have an unforgettable mascot incident, an unfortunate mascot incident. I don't know how these things happen, but they happen. We have the update on why the observatory in New Mexico was closed. Connor McKnight, Let the Record Show, is not buying the rationale.
No, not even a little bit. I've got a favorite in the NFL who hasn't been a favorite in quite some time, and also a piece on the Cubs rotation. Worth a note, I'll tell you, and you're going to go, well, I knew that. But it's nice to have some reinforcement.
I also have a bit of advice that I've received that I don't think I'm going to be able to act on. It has to do with insects. It has to do with another insect that is to be added to the list of ones you should not eradicate. But I don't think I'm going to take this advice, even though I believe it's proper advice. But I think I am fundamentally hardwired to not accept this advice.
That will be next in the midday midway here on Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly.